We're discussing some questions and answers about Guru Tattva. So this is question number 8. Is it possible to make advancement in sadhana without Sri Guru's grace? In other words, is it possible to make advancement in this path of bhakti without the mercy of the spiritual master? What is this grace like? How is this grace? Grace means mercy. How is this grace experienced? Please instruct us a little on this. Very incredible question. You say, it's all mercy. Well, what is this mercy? What is it like? So here's what they're saying. Deko.
Yeah.
The great souls are saying, Guru Kripa Hi Kevalam. In other words, Kevala means one or only. Nothing can be achieved without the actual grace of the Guru. On the spiritual path, we are blind. Unless Sri Gurudev is so kind to take us by the hand, who will take us along, Baba? Our Bahir Mukhi Chitta Vritti. Bahir Mukhi Chitta Vritti. As we turn, that means Bahir means outside, Mukhi means face. Chitta Vritti means external consciousness or turning away from God is mayak, it's illusion. And the conditioned soul is unable to kick away maya. Surrender to the orders of Sri Guru. Be his surrendered servant. This is your duty. He will kick away maya. It is all his grace. If he does not bestow his grace, maya, or, in other words, our external consciousness, cannot be kicked away. Now, what do you understand by this Guru Kripa that is being described here? Many disciples go to Sri Guru and say, Prabhu, or Gurudev, be kind. Everything will be attained if you are merciful to me. Do you take this mercy to be something independent, that the Guru can just take the disciple and carry him on his head or so? This is not mercy. In other words, it's a two-way, what he's kind of leading up to, it's two-way, you know, that the mercy, you get it, but then you have to act. It's not these gurus just puts you on the head and carries you. Do you take this mercy to be something independent, that the guru can just take the disciple and carry him on his head? This is not mercy. Do you know what is called mercy? When Sri Gurudev has a pleasant and blissful disposition within his heart towards the submissive and devoted disciple, this feeling is his mercy. When the disciple serves the spiritual master, which means he's serving Krishna, he's chanting very nicely his rounds and studying and performing other service that he's asked to do, deity worship or whatever, cooking, sewing, preaching, raising families, whatever the service is, and the spiritual master is very pleased with that service, he's very happy if it's done properly, then he feels happy and pleased within his heart. And then happiness from his heart is transferred to the disciple as mercy. And this is what he says. When Sri Gurudev has a pleasant and blissful disposition within his heart towards the submissive and devoted disciple, this feeling is his mercy. Apart from this mercy, there is not an independent matter. Whenever there is such a sweet and affectionate exchange in the heart between the guru and the disciple, and there is genuine mutual attachment between them, this thing called kripa can be experienced. Because see, the question, if you recall, the question was, is it possible to make advancement without Guru's grace? So that's been answered. He says, nothing can be achieved without actual grace of Guru. We read that 3 minutes ago. Then the second part of the question, what is this grace like? And then he explains something, what the grace is like. Then he says, how is it experienced? So now he's explaining, how is it experienced? So he says that, this is how it's he says, this thing called Guru Kripa can be experienced whenever there is a sweet and affectionate exchange in the heart between guru and disciple. and there is genuine mutual attachment between them. In other words, the disciple is attached to the guru to serve him, and the guru is attached to the disciple to liberate them and to serve them. The guru is serving Krishna to the disciple, giving them Krishna, and the disciple is serving the guru so that Krishna will be pleased and reveal himself to the disciple. So there's attachment, and then there's a sweet and affectionate exchange. Otherwise, if there are no feelings, and only the mouth says, be merciful, then mercy will not be attained. In other words, he understands, Gurudev, give me mercy. But he actually doesn't have any attachment to his guru. He's just coming like, give me some money or something. Someone has money, you don't really care about that person, you want their money. Someone has a bunch of money in their pockets, hey, you're rich, give me some money. But you have you don't even know me, you're not even my friend, why should I give you? No, just give me some money, I know you have money, give me money. You have money, so you give me money. Oh Guru, you have mercy. I know gurus are supposed to have mercy. Krishna's mercy. You're carrying Krishna's mercy. So give me mercy. It's like the people touch your feet. They come up and they touch your feet. They don't know you. They have no relationship with them. They just want to take mercy, give you their karma and take some punya, some purity from you by giving their bad karma to you by touching your feet. If there's no feelings and only the mouth says, be merciful, then mercy will not be attained. And if the guru only says, I have bestowed my mercy, then mercy has not been bestowed. If the guru just says, yes, I have bestowed my mercy, then mercy has not been bestowed. The feelings of love between guru and disciple must be on an equal footing. When the disciple cannot ascend to the same level of feelings and love as his Sri Gurudev, then he can never experience the mercy of the Guru, and he can never attain its sweet flavor. Another name for the attainment of this Guru Kripa is the attainment of the mercy of the Lord. Hence I say, first, you must try to come to the same level of ecstatic feelings and love as Sri Gurudev through exclusive obedience. And then the experience of his grace will come by itself. The experience of this kripa can be obtained through the blissful exchange of feelings between guru and disciple and nothing else. The experience of this guru kripa can be obtained through the blissful exchange of feelings between the guru and disciple and nothing else. A disciple who does not develop a blissful, sweet, an affectionate relationship towards his guru with a hearty love, which is beautiful to remember. In other words, who is not able to ascend to the equal platform of feelings and love with Sri Guru now, is also not suitable to attain Bhagavan now. So in other words, it may take some time. The idea is when the disciple can develop a very, very blissful, sweet, and affectionate relationship with his guru. In other words, like someone says, I want to get the mercy. So the guru will say, the mercy's in my orders. We heard this, right? This is kind of a long-winded way of saying what we already heard before. You want me mercy? My mercy. I give you my mercy. Follow my orders and you'll get the mercy. Oh, but Gurudev is so hard. Well, so that's what he's saying. If you're obedient means to obey, to follow the orders, do your service properly, and you follow the order, then the mercy will come in that. Because by following your order, you'll please the spiritual master when he's pleased. Another thing he's saying here is that you have to develop your love for the spiritual master. As you develop your love, it's interesting. He said, first, you must try to come to the same level of ecstatic feelings and love as Sri Gurudev through exclusive obedience. Then the experience of his grace will come by itself. So if we don't develop a blissful and sweet affectionate relationship towards Guru with a hearty love, we won't be able to ascend to the platform of the Guru's love and feelings, and then we won't be able to attain Krishna. Well, what he's saying is that come to the same level of feelings and affection that the Guru is showing to you, you have to show to him. That's what he's saying. In other words, you can perceive that your guru is being very kind, being very affectionate, being very personal, and looking out for you and always caring for you. And you have to see that and experience that and try yourself to come to that level. He's showing you by his love, by his affection towards you. And then if you reciprocate with that, then that's what it says. You have to try to come to the same level of ecstatic feelings and love. That doesn't mean try to, imagine what the internal transcendental emotions of the spiritual master are in his relationship with Radha and Krishna. That's not what we're talking about. Don't try to imagine. Just try to reciprocate in kind. Like they say, this expression, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, or something. Yeah. In other words, he's being so affectionate and kind and loving, and he's teaching me how to be affectionate and kind and loving, and let me try to return by being affectionate and kind and loving to the spiritual master. In the context of Krishna's service. One way you express the feelings of love is through obedience, because love means to serve. Right? If you love someone, you serve them. That's the meaning of love. Love without service is not love. It's nothing. Love is a dynamic. It's an active exchange. It's a living, moving principle, full of emotions and actions and feelings. It's dynamic and expanding, and it's self-generating, self-perpetuating, especially when we're speaking of transcendental love, where material love is temporary and limited. Question number 9. Please tell us something about the generosity and forgiveness of Sri Gurudev. In what way is he generous and forgiving towards the disciple? To the disciple, Sri Gurudev exists in an ever-blissful form. As soon as the disciple sees Sri Gurudev, and even as soon as he just remembers him, he will experience an indescribable ecstasy. There's quotes. He will say, with exclamation marks of quotes, Sri Gurudev, aha! How blissful the disciple feels when he pronounces these words. It is as if all his heart's sufferings disappear at that moment. When a disciple only once sees that honey-sweet mood on his Gurudev's face that is about to smile and that is so dear to behold, or hears only one nectar-anointed word that is so auspicious to hear from his mouth, his restlessly burning heart is his, the disciple's, restlessly burning heart is sprinkled with a very sweetly pacifying, pleasant waterfall. Actually, there is no greater place in this burning material world to go for soothing that scorching sensation than Sri Gurudev. And what more can I say about his clemency? It means forgiveness. Because that's the two questions here you're asking about. What about his generosity and his forgiveness? And his generosity is, you just say Sri Gurudev and you feel blissful. And if you just once see this honey sweet mood on his face that is about to smile and so dear to behold. I have already told you before that he who cannot forgive can never become anyone's guru. Sri Guru is always full of forgiveness. Guru is such a great thing. His most elevated characteristic is that he is always very forgiving and is endowed with a very pleasant nature. The disciple is not able to commit any offense to him. If the disciple fails to communicate his offense for some reason or other, the guru forgives him even before it is uttered or spoken. It is the guru's nature to forgive. Sri Gurudev is the manifest embodiment of forgiveness and affection. It's in bold. He had put some things in bold print here. I don't know if that's the author or the translator, but Sri Gurudev is the manifest embodiment of forgiveness and affection. If you do not see him in exactly that manner, then you cannot experience the great example that Sri Guru sets. Baba, your hearts are continuously contaminated by the mud of material life. And Gurudev is constantly wiping that dirt from you. He does not take offense at you. And if you say he does, his status becomes diminished. Remember this essential instruction. Your guru does not see faults and is always in bliss. And you know how generous Sri Gurudev is? Because he's asking about forgiveness and generosity. An exemplary Satguru, bona fide spiritual master, must be very, very affectionate and generous. I'll give you an example of his generosity. One day, Gurudev went to the house of a disciple. The disciple was very poor. He placed a few paisa on a tray and anxiously said, "Gurudev, I am very poor. Somehow I manage to make ends meet with great hardship every day. I am not able to honor you in the way you deserve." Seeing the humility and the poverty of this disciple, Gurudev quietly called someone without the knowledge of the poor disciple. And Gurudev said, "If there is enough money with us, then take 400 rupees from our collection and give it to this disciple. Aha! Just see how severe is his poverty and how troubled he is. Later, when his situation has improved, he will return the money to me." End of the quote from the guru. When the money was given to the disciple burst into tears, fell on his knees before his guru, and wept with folded hands. "Gurudev, forgive me. Don't make me an offender by forcing me to accept the wealth of the guru." After showing all this humility, he refused to accept any of the money. Then Gurudev smiled, held the disciple's right hand with his left hand, and put the money in the disciple's right hand, in a very straightforward, affectionate, and sweet mood, saying, "Is Guru a stranger to you? Why don't you accept the money? Factually, there is no more intimate relative than the Guru." This is how generous he will be towards the disciple. So in other words, we mentioned earlier how the disciple, he may see, he can have a two-part vision of the Guru, that my spiritual master is my dearest relative. He's like my father, my friend, or my brother, or my teacher. He's like a family or a relative. That's one part of the vision, but at the same time, he has to maintain the vision that the Guru is God. He's actually the Supreme Lord, manifest before me, with all good qualities and all transcendental knowledge. He's my liberator and savior, and he will actually provide everything required for me to go back to Godhead. So these two aspects of the vision must be there. So in this aspect, he's acting like the dear relative. He says, "Am I a stranger to you? Like if you're destitute and your father finds you in impoverished condition, he says, 'Oh, you don't have enough money for your wife and your babies. Here, I'm your father. I'm very wealthy. Please take some.' 'No, no, I can't take. Please don't take.'" So Guru is like that. In this capacity, he's acting like a very loving father. Why don't you accept the money? There's no more intimate relative than Guru. Question. How should the Guru and the disciple perceive each other as soon as they meet each other? I don't know if this means first meeting or when they meet all the time. You can meet your Guru today and then next week or next year or next 6 months. So let's see. I think it means anytime, actually. I can see from the answer. It means anytime you go and meet your Guru, how should you perceive him and how should he perceive you? One day a disciple went to see his Gurudev's lotus feet with folded hands and humbly said, "Gurudev, I am totally untouchable, fallen, and low-born. How can I express how much mercy you have given me that you have allowed me to touch your feet?" Hearing these words, his Gurudev will say, "Ore! Do you know what I think when I see you? This is what I think. Oh, my Kaliapad," that must be his name, these are names of his disciples. "My Kaliapad has come. My Girin has come, or my Govinda has come." These are disciples. "Other than this, I don't think anything. I don't consider whether you are low-born or high-born, poor or rich. When I see Kaliapad, my disciple Kaliapad, I just think him to be my innocent child, Kaliapad. And when I see my Girin, I think him to be just my innocent child, Girin. I don't think at all about whether you are a Brahmanan, Brahmana, a Chandala, rich or poor. Oh, Ray, you are all just the associates of my Lord Nityananda. You are all his eternal servants. And I have this relationship with you eternally, birth after birth. Don't you know what Thakur Mahashaya has said? Nitai Charana Satya Tahara Sevaka Nitya. Nitai's lotus feet are real, and his servants are eternal. Birth after birth, you are Nityananda's servants. Can I therefore despise you? Don't you know that my Lord Nityananda was embracing the Chandalas? And on the other hand, do you know what is the duty of you disciples? The obedient disciple, in other words, he's saying how he's seeing, because the question is, how will the guru and disciple perceive each other? Right, that's the question. So the disciple's coming very humbly and saying, oh, Gurudev, you know, you allowed me to touch your feet, I'm low born, I'm fallen. And so now the guru speaks how he sees his disciple. He says, I don't see you as low born as a chandala or untouchable or a mlecha or a yavana or angrezi or this or that or anything. I see you as my innocent child. What does he say? I see you, and you're all associates of my Lord Nityananda. We have a relationship eternally. You know, in other words, he sees an equality. You're my innocent child, and we're all Nityananda's servants eternally. You and I. Now he's saying, now the guru is teaching the disciple. This is how the obedient disciple, will see his. Of course, disciple. Actually, the meaning of the word disciple means obedient. Actually, if you are a real disciple, you're obedient, because disciple means one who follows discipline, or one who is obedient. One who obeys orders is obedient. So you're not. If you're not obedient, you're not a disciple. If you don't follow the guru, you're the undisciple or the non-disciple. Oh, my guru is so and so. No, he's not. What do you mean? Because you don't obey him, so you're not his disciple. He's not your guru. Like you go to someone who's not following the principles or not doing any service. Oh, who's your guru? Oh, my guru is Prabhupada. My guru is so-and-so Maharaj. Oh, really? He's not your guru. What do you mean? And you're not his disciple. Hey! Because you're not following. You're not following the four principles. You're not chanting 16 rounds a day. You're not doing what he told you. You're not doing the service he asked you to do. So you're not his disciple and he's not your guru. There's no obedience, there's no guru. There's no obedience. There's no discipline. No disciple. No disciple. No guru. So he's saying you're the obedient disciple. In one sense, it's not required. You just say disciple. It means obedient. The obedient disciple will see his Sri Gurudev as being the Lord Himself, never as an ordinary human being. I suppose we'll probably hear this point about 4 million times in the course of this discussion of Guru Tattva. We have to hear it 4 billion times and 5 million times and 10 million times and reflect on it and meditate on it, and someday by serving and by humility and obedience we may realize how the Supreme Personality of God is manifest in the form of Gurudev. Gurudev should never be ignored or slighted, and his orders should never be disobeyed. Sri Gurudev is the Lord's Acharya Shakti. In the Bhagavad, Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna told Uddhava in Uddhava Gita, Acharyamam vijaniyam navamanyeta karichit samartya buddhyasuyeta sarvadeva mayoguru. This is the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 17, verse 27. How about that? It's a very, very important verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Nascha Preshu Badreshu.
Nascha Preshu Badreshu.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Bhagavat Yuttama Shloke.
Bhagavat Yuttama Shloke.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Ramcheva Narottamam.
Ramcheva Narottamam.
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Tato Jayam Udirayet.
Tato Jayam Udirayet.
This is a very important verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is often quoted whenever there is a discussion of Guru Tattva. And it has supreme significance because it's not spoken from an egotistical viewpoint of some guru speaking about himself, but it's spoken by the Supreme Lord Himself to His beloved servant, secretary, friend, devotee, Uddhava. In the Uddhava Gita, 11th canto, chapter 17, text 27, translation. One should know the Acharya as myself. Krishna speaking. One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is a representative of all the demigods. And some quote here from Prabhupada's purport from Chaitanya Charitamrita about the same verse. A spiritual master is not an enjoyer of facilities offered by his disciples. Spiritual master is like a parent. Without the attentive service of his parents, a child cannot grow to manhood. Similarly, without the care of the spiritual master, one cannot rise to the plane of transcendental service. The spiritual master is also called Acharya, or a transcendental professor of spiritual science. The Manasamhita 2.140 explains the duties of an Acharya, describing that a bona fide spiritual master accepts charge of disciples. He teaches them the Vedic knowledge with all its intricacies, and he gives them their second birth. The ceremony performed to initiate a disciple into the study of spiritual science is called Upaniti, or the function that brings one nearer to the spiritual master. One cannot be brought to nearer to the spiritual master, cannot have a sacred thread, and thus he is called a sudra. The sacred thread worn on the body of a brahmana, Kachura Vaishya, is a symbol of initiation by the spiritual master. It is worth nothing if it is worn merely to boast of high parentage. The duty of the spiritual master is to initiate the disciple, and after this purificatory process, the spiritual master actually begins to teach the disciple about the Vedas. A person born a Shudra is not barred from such spiritual initiation, provided he is approved by the spiritual master. Acharya is one who knows the import of all Vedic literatures. He explains the purpose of the Vedas, he abides by their rules and regulations, and teaches his disciples to act in the same way. Only out of his immense compassion does the personality of Godhead reveal himself as the spiritual master. Therefore, in the dealings of an Acharya, there are no activities but those of transcendental loving service to the Lord. He is the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. In other words, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and the spiritual master is the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. It is worthwhile to take shelter of such a steady devotee who is called Ashraya Vigraha, the manifestation or form of the Lord of whom one must take shelter. In other words, I want the shelter of God. Well, you got that shelter by Guru. Guru is the Vigraha, the form of Ashraya. Ashraya means shelter. If one poses himself as an Acharya, but does not have an attitude of servitorship to the Lord, he's an offender. The bona fide spiritual master always engages in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By this test, he is known to be a direct manifestation and a genuine representative of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Such a spiritual master is known as Acharya Dev. Influenced by envious temperament and dissatisfied because of an attitude of sense gratification, mundaners criticize a real Acharya. However, A bona fide Acharya is none different from the personality of Godhead. And therefore, to envy such an Acharya is to envy the personality of Godhead. The disciple should always think of his spiritual master. Raghunath Das Goswami says, one should always think of the spiritual master in terms of his intimate relationship with Mukunda, Sri Krishna. And the Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami, has clearly defined that a pure devotee's observation of the spiritual master and Lord Shiva as one with the personality of Godhead exists in terms of their being very dear to the Lord, but not identical with God in all respects. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms that all the revealed scriptures accept the spiritual master to be identical with the personality of Godhead, because he is a very dear and confidential servant of the Lord. Kintu prapurya priyavatasya vande guru sri charanaravindam. Kintu prapurya priyavatasya. He's a very dear servant of the master, priya bhakta, our guru. Gaudiya Vaishnavas therefore worship Sri Gurudev in the light of his being the servitor of the personality of Godhead. In all the ancient literatures of devotional service, and in the more recent songs of Narottam Das and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other unalloyed Vaishnavas, the spiritual master is always considered to be either one of the confidential associates of Srimati Radharani or a manifested representation of Srila Nityananda Prabhu. This is a quote from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 46, where Prabhupada gives a purport on this verse. Remember another thing. Whenever anybody develops the desire to associate with the saints, you must understand that the Lord has bestowed His mercy on that person. It is not the individual's own desire, it is the arrangement of the Lord. Just see, you would not have known me, and I would not have known you. You did not say, quote, when you saw me just once during the Panihati festival, end of quote. It was the Lord Himself who brought you there. So you see, as soon as the Guru and the disciple see each other, because the whole question is about how's the Guru see. You see, as soon as the Guru and disciple see each other, a honey-sweet master-servant relationship develops. The Guru, knowing the disciple to be an exclusively surrendered and earnest servant, casts an affectionate glance on him. And the disciple, knowing his Guru to be directly the Lord Himself, looks at the Guru with devotion and love. Other than this, there should be no considerations. Factually, the unprecedented ecstasy that awakens in the hearts of Guru and disciple when they meet each other causes them both to go beyond themselves for a while. There is not even any opportunity for any further deliberation. The Guru whose heart is anointed with compassion and the disciple who is exclusively fixed in the lotus feet of his Guru can experience the truth of these words. Thus, the meeting of Guru and the disciple is a very sweet affair, a matter of great relish for the devotee. That doesn't mean the first meeting, it means whenever you meet. A Guru, knowing the disciple to be an exclusively surrendered and earnest servant, casts an affectionate glance on him. And the disciple, knowing that his Guru to be directly the Lord Himself, in other words, you're looking at the Guru, you're looking at Krishna. Just like if you ever sit in a room with some with disciples that are really surrendered to their Guru, and you sit a little bit to the side, you're not a disciple of that Guru, but you sit in that room. Like I visited some different Gurus in this Bharat Bhumi, and I sat there, and sometimes I sit on the edge, and I watched. I mean, the eyes of the disciples are practically full of tears. And sometimes when the Guru is speaking, some of the disciples, they're so much exclusively devoted to the Guru and so much completely, you know, absorbed in everything He says, they're crying when He's speaking. You've seen this also, right? I mean, I've seen it in Mathura and also in Vrindavan. And Gurudev is speaking, and the disciples are crying. And he's speaking katha, and they're crying because they're absorbed in the katha. But just the way that the exchanges of between the disciples and the guru, you can see it as an outsider just going for katha. You're there listening, and you're looking at all this. They're looking at Gurudev, and he's looking at such a sweetness. And that depends on how surrendered the disciples are. Because as they're surrendered more and more to the Lord in service and to the gurus in service, then the guru becomes very pleased. And, so, and that means they're pleasing Krishna. And the more they surrender, the more they can see Krishna in their guru. So when they look at the spiritual master, they're looking at Krishna. So that's what he's saying, that knowing his guru to be directly the Lord himself, the disciple looks at the guru with devotion and love. Factually, the unprecedented ecstasy that awakens in the hearts of guru and disciple when they meet each other causes them both to go beyond themselves for a while. And there's not even any opportunity for any further deliberation. The guru whose heart is anointed with compassion. Now this kind of experience happens if these two factors are there. If you have so many molecules of hydrogen and so much of oxygen, you get water. If you have more or less, then you don't get water. So these factors are there. A guru whose heart is anointed with compassion and a disciple who is exclusively fixed in the lotus feet of such a guru, they can experience the truth of these words. Thus, the meeting of guru and of real compassionate guru and genuine disciple is a very sweet affair, a matter of great relish for the devotee. When a disciple is bad or misbehaving or something, and he comes in, then he feels like the spiritual master is, you know, there's like laser beams coming out of his eyes, shooting into his heart. That's why we have the expression, the Gurudev is like hard as a thunderbolt or soft as a rose. Question number 11. How should we see the exchange of giving and taking between the guru and the disciple? The genuine guru never depends on his disciple. He always remains dependent upon the Lord. He who has turned his face even once towards the Lord will never leave this dependence,
not even in the greatest calamity,
to become dependent on a disciple. In other words, a guru will never ever become dependent on a disciple. Because he's turned to the Lord, and he depends on the Lord. So many millions of disciples may come, but if they all disappear the next day, it wouldn't change anything because he depends on the Lord. The disciple also knows his own Gurudev to be solely dependent upon the Lord, and thus he considers himself greatly honored. If the guru is dependent upon the disciple, and if the disciple also considers the guru to be like that, the disciple thinking that he is doing his guru a favor by giving him money, then we must understand that they have both forgotten their swarup, real position. The guru has fallen down from his dependence upon the Lord, and the disciple has fallen down from his self-esteem as a servant. During transactions of giving and taking, both the guru and disciple must remember who is Savior, the object of service, and who is Sevaka, servant. And when they do so, there is no more possibility of confusion. Look, following his promise in the Gita, Ananyas Chintiyantumam Yejana Paripashate, Tesham Nityavayuktanam Yogakshimam Maham Yaham, Gita 9:22, the Lord personally carries all necessities of life to his eternally engaged devotees, or Mahapurushas. Now, when one obedient disciple wants to give his Sri Gurudev some exquisite edibles or garments, then will Sri Guru praise him into the skies? Will the disciple think he has done a great benefit to the Guru? No. Such a mentality should never be there. Here we should understand that the Lord had the desire to give something to Gurudev. This desire is then infused into the heart of the disciple, who will just think, I am simply the Lord's porter. Porter means, you know, messenger, servant, whatever. I have been able to carry this gift of the Lord in my hands to Guru for his service. And it is my greatest fortune that Sri Gurudev has accepted this gift. Is the disciple at all able to give something to his guru? The guru will also think that this item was necessary and the Lord has given it to me, using this disciple as a porter. If he thinks the disciple has given it to me, then his dependence on the Lord will weaken and he will not be able to love his disciple with all his heart. That is because today the disciple could give him something, but tomorrow he will perhaps not be able to do so, and that might diminish the guru's love for him. That is why I say, the basic cause of giving and taking between the guru and disciple must be seen as the wish of the Lord. As we're saying, keep the Lord in the center. Always keep Krishna in the center. And everything is connected. The guru is serving that center and bringing us to that center. Everything is coming from that center. The center is Krishna. Krishna has arranged it. Everything is Krishna's mercy, Krishna's arrangement. Oh, we were printing this book. We needed some money. Oh, Krishna sent it through this hand. One time it came through the mail with a check. Krishna sent it through the mail. Another time he came and gave a little plastic bag here. The eternally devoted disciple can bring all necessary things to his guru's house, considering himself a servant and a mere porter. And thus he feels blessed and fulfilled. Look, Baba, you should not have any misunderstanding about this. So Krishna is doing everything. The Lord had the desire to give something to Gurudev. In other words, for example, Gurudev is printing some books and he expresses that funds are a little short, but anyway, Krishna will send something, don't worry. So then the disciple says, well, I can give something. And Guru says, don't worry, it's not required. It will come. But then somehow there's inspiration, and the Guru is not asking at all. Doesn't ask, please give me, I depend on you, please give me. Doesn't ask anything. So don't worry. But the disciple becomes, within the heart, becomes infused with his desire, and they say, no, I want to do it. So it was, no, I went out and did it. I wanted to do it. It's not because you, I know you didn't ask me, but I within myself, I genuinely, I really wanted to do this. What created that want is the super soul. Because the Lord wanted Gurudev to have this money for the Lord's service. So he arranged to create that desire. So we thought it was our own desire in our heart. The desire was coming from Krishna. So then the Guru says, oh. See, the Guru didn't ask at all. It wasn't an order from the Guru. He wasn't requested. But independently, moved by the super soul, the disciple voluntarily went and arranged for some money to give for the publishing of a book. So this way, this giving and taking is simply the guru is simply depending on God. He just depends on Krishna. He doesn't depend on his disciple. Well, I don't need your money. I don't depend on you. If Krishna gives me money, we print a book. If he doesn't, I don't print it. That means he doesn't want it. Oh, you have money, you give me money, okay, now you're nice, I like you. You gave me money to print a book. Well, next book, we don't have any more money. That's what he's saying. He said you have to watch that. He said, it might diminish the guru's love for the disciple. Today you give something, thinking I'm giving, and then the next day he asks or depends on you, and you can't give him anything. He says, oh, you know, not such a good disciple, you can't give me anything now. But no, it's always Krishna's giving, and it's just coming, you're coming as a porter. So it's Krishna gave you today, and if you don't get anything next time, well then Krishna didn't want to give you something that time. The disciple, it's not the disciple's fault, he's simply the porter, he's the messenger. Question. You said before that Sri Gurudev is, oh, this is question 12. Gurudev is always very forgiving and merciful. He never takes offense at the disciple. Then does that mean that the disciple will not suffer any reactions for offenses that he may commit to his guru? Because it says that before we said the guru doesn't take offense. The disciple may make so many offenses in serving guru aparad or whatever, seva aparad. Let's say guru aparad. But it says Guru, he's always forgiving and he doesn't take any offenses. So that means that the disciple won't have to suffer any reaction for his offenses? Important point. When the disciple disobeys the orders of Sri Gurudev and engages in some sinful activity, then Sri Gurudev will surely not take any offense at him, since he is very merciful. But if the guru is suffering because of the disciple's misbehavior, then the disciple will reap the reactions. Why would Gurudev take offense? If you pollute your own consciousness through your bad activities, you will suffer the reactions to the flaw yourself. If you smear ink or some smelly substance on your white cloth or on your clean body, then you will suffer the inconvenience yourself. That is needless to say. That is why I say, although Gurudev does not take offense, you will suffer the reactions of your contemptible behavior yourself. In other words, you go and commit a sin, that's your reaction. You get the reaction, it's not on Guru. Prabhupada mentions that. Sometimes, this is also mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that Krishna will give a token of suffering to the Guru to show the disciples that they should properly behave, that Guru is suffering because of me, and also to remind Gurudev, maybe you're being too lenient and initiating unqualified disciples. They're not properly prepared for initiation. You're too eager for followers. Nadanam najanam nasundaram. Or Jaitanya thought, nadanam najanam. We don't want followers. I only want pure bhakti, ahoitaki, bhagavad bhakti, ahoitaki tvayi. So in that way, sometimes some reaction may come. But generally, all the sins of the disciple are absorbed by the holy name and by the transcendental knowledge that's given by it. The guru takes all the sins by giving. He takes all the sins and all the contamination from the disciple by giving him the holy name and transcendental knowledge. And the actual cleansing and purifying all the heart is done by the guru because he gives transcendental knowledge and the pure name, Shuddhanam. So actually, ultimately, it's the pure name, the holy name of the Lord, and the transcendental knowledge. That's what we have to read and read and read and study, this purifying the soul and heart, the heart and consciousness of the disciple. It's a nice analogy. So if you know, if a bird, if you do something bad and you get all smelly stuff on you, and you're the one that smells. Like if your dog sometimes runs out in the backyard and rolls in a dead body and comes in the house and he smells like a dead body. When a disciple disobeys the orders of the Gurudev and engages in sinful activities, then Sri Gurudev will surely not take offense at him. He says, you committed some sin. Okay, I don't hold it against you, but you have to suffer, not me. Since he's very merciful. But if the guru is suffering because of the disciple's misbehavior, then the disciple will reap the reactions. The question part was, will the disciple not suffer any reactions to any offenses he commits to Sri Guru? So the disciple commits a sin. The disciple will have to suffer for that sin. Now, and the guru doesn't hold any offense. He doesn't hold any offense. In some cases, if the guru has to suffer because of the disciple's misbehavior. Now what that means is, say, for example, the disciple goes, he robs a bank. And it comes in the paper. Krishna Das, disciple of so-and-so, robbed a bank. So now the guru will have to suffer some what we call infamy, right? He doesn't go to jail. The disciple goes to jail. But because of connection. It's like if you do something wrong, then I also suffer because I'm connected. So if you do something, which sometimes, you may do something, you may rob a bank and get caught, and my name doesn't come involved, and you just go to jail, no one knows anything. So then then you suffer the reaction because you made sin, but nothing comes to me. But sometimes, if the guru is suffering, because of the disciple's misbehavior, there's all kinds of ways to suffer, not only nightmares or physical sickness or infamy or whatever. Then the disciple will get reactions for that, which he said. He'll have to get reactions for causing the guru to suffer, plus reactions of his own sin. Even though the guru is not holding offense. He's not holding offense, but if he has to suffer, then it's like a double sin. Krishna won't be very pleased. Because so many thousands and thousands of sins on a disciple. And not all the sins, of course, are taken at the time of initiation. That's the beginning. Initiation is the beginning. Otherwise, you'd be a pure devotee. Your name is Krishna. It's okay, I'm a pure devotee. If at initiation, my guru takes all my sins, then there's no, it's easy street after that. There's no more struggle. I have no more narthas. Right? But is that the fact? No. Initiation means he accepts you for purification. He accepts you for training. You accept him and he accepts you. And then what does he give you? What does he give you which purifies you? Shuddha Nam, the holy name, and transcendental knowledge. And continually feeding you transcendental knowledge. And of course, either by reading Prabhupada's books and teaching you Prabhupada's books and classes, feeding you transcendental knowledge and encourage you and teaching you about Nam Tattva and the chant of the holy name. And these things purify you and take all your sins. Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Prityaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papevyo, Moksha Ishami Masuja. He says, Aham Sarva Papevyo. He says, abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all. It doesn't say Gurudev Sarva Papevyo. It says Aham Sarva Papevyo. He says, I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. How do I do it? I do it by the name, because the name is me. I am the name. There's no difference. How do I do it? I do it by transcendental knowledge. I am the knowledge. I am the compiler of knowledge. I am the knowledge and the goal of knowledge. Vedas Charsava Mahame Vedyo Vedantakrit Vedavit Evacham. Amen. Veda Ham. I am the Veda. I am transcendental knowledge. I am the holy name. I take the reactions. And how do you get me? From Guru. Say initiation begins when you accept Guru in your heart. When you actually accept in your heart that this person I'm going to follow. I'm going to stick with this person. I'm convinced. Enough convinced to follow this person, give my life to this person, and go back to Godhead under this person's shelter and guidance.